The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
You believe school systems should tell children what to do. I believe parents should be in charge of their kids' education.
Education has been a red-hot issue in Northern Virginia's Fairfax and Loudoun counties this year.
I just want parents to be informed about what is happening in the schools. And I think this year, parents were not aware of what was being taught.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was Fox News on the heated Virginia gubernatorial race and Terry McAuliffe's controversial comments about how parents shouldn't tell schools what to teach. And, of course, a lot of parents have had enough, right? And they're going to these school boards. They're sounding off. I was sharing with you a story not too long ago about a school board meeting where one parent came and read a book that was taken out of the library that their kids have access to, and the school board said, no, please don't read that here now. There might be kids here. There were no kids there, but that's how vile and crude it was. You know, at the end of last month, the National Association of School Boards sent a letter to President Biden, and they asked for federal assistance. They wanted federal assistance in dealing with people who were disrupting these school board meetings. So the letter listed 20 different instances where people interrupted or they disrupted these meetings. And look, again, these are taking place all over the country. Also, where school board members were threatened with violence. And I'm not an advocate of that at all. But the biggest reason for these actions, parents have had enough. They don't agree with indoctrinating their kids with gender theory. They don't like critical race theory being taught to their kids. They don't like all these COVID-19 requirements that schools are mandating on these children. The parents don't want them, especially masks for second graders. You know, it's ridiculous. The NASB said that because these threats went through the post office and they were supposedly interrupting interstate commerce, the federal government needs to intervene. So President Biden must have read that letter. He acted on it very quickly. Just 5 days later, the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, he issued his own one-page memorandum to the FBI and to U.S. attorneys all across our great nation. Let me share with you what he said. I want to quote him. He said, quote, "I am directing the Federal Bureau of Investigation, working with each United States attorney, to convene meetings with federal, state, local, tribal, and territorial leaders in each federal judicial district within 30 days of the issuance of this memorandum to facilitate the discussion of strategies for addressing threats against school administrators, board members, teachers, and staff, and will open dedicated lines of communications for threat reporting, assessment, and response." So that it was a pretty quick response. It's also a heavy-handed response, bringing in the FBI, right? Bringing in the FBI in what is essentially a local problem. That's kind of how I see it. So if you know, I wonder if the FBI agents thought that they were, you know, I have a friend who's an FBI agent, right? Went to school with him for years. I'm sure when he signed up, he didn't think he'd be monitoring school board meetings. You know, that's probably the last thing. Hey, for perspective on this, I've invited Andrew McCarthy to join me. He's a best-selling author. In fact, if you want to check out his book, it's called Ball of Collusion: The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. And, of course, you probably know him from National Review Institute. He's senior fellow there and, of course, a Fox News contributor. It's good to have him with us today. Andy, good afternoon. Great to have you back.
Drew, how are you?
I'm well. I'm hanging in. You know Merrick Garland personally, from what I understand, and you interacted with him during the time that you were prosecuting the blind sheik. You wrote in National Review recently that he reminded you of something during that prosecution. Can you share what that was?
Yeah, I haven't had much. I haven't had any interaction that I can recall, Drew, since I prosecuted terrorists in the mid '90s, which is a long time ago. And right. Merrick Garland was a high-ranking official in the Clinton Justice Department, but I always found him to be a very solid law enforcement guy, and he, like other Clinton officials, was very concerned when we were bringing tests against cases against violent jihadists that we were careful not to throw around words like incitement and terrorism in a way that could be perceived as chilling the First Amendment right to dissent and to expression, even if it was condemnatory of the United States. They were very concerned that we give a wide berth to free speech, even if it was speech that in some instances seemed to be loosely threatening, but certainly anything that was, you know, even obnoxious and aggressive, as long as it didn't pose an immediate threat of force. And that was how they understood the First Amendment in the 90s, and for good reason. That's very consistent with Supreme Court precedent and federal statutory law. So I about fell out of my chair when I read Garland's memorandum that basically sicks the FBI on parents who are disturbed about the way the school administrators are indoctrinating their children. Garland, I think, as well as anybody who's ever been in his position, well knows that there's no federal authority to monitor interactions between parents and school boards. And it's obviously true that if there are threats that threats of violence, that's something for law enforcement to be concerned about, but mainly it's law enforcement at the state level. There's no federal authority to intrude unless there is a threat of violence that is not only real, but that actually, if it were carried out, would violate some federal law. So, for example, if it was a bombing or a threat to attack our military installations or a federal official or a foreign government official, those are all federal crimes. But even if I went up to a school administrator in my local community and said, if you're going to try to teach that to my kid, I'm going to punch you in the nose. That's an obnoxious thing. And I certainly hope a police officer would put me under arrest and that the state would follow up with that. But it's not a federal crime.
Yeah, and to your point, I think that's, look, I don't know how, we've got a lot of school districts, a lot of issues, a lot of upset parents. The FBI had a, you know, had a police this, it would be ridiculous. These issues with school boards, they're local problems. Local police and other local enforcement should deal with them, shouldn't they? And how big are they? Is this being blown out of proportion? I mean, I can't imagine that you're going to need that much law enforcement. I know a lot of parents are upset and they're voicing their discontent, but you know, how many people need to be arrested? I don't know.
Nobody needs to be arrested. This is just a politicized intimidation tactic. And it's the kind of thing that the Obama-Biden Justice Department did to a fare-thee-well for 8 years. The idea is they have this raw law enforcement power. And even if they don't have a valid reason to bring charges, they can always threaten to investigate. And if they threaten to investigate, that intimidates people. If you have to go out and hire a lawyer because you think that you may be prosecuted by the federal government, that obviously is prohibitive, and it chills your free expression. So this is just an intimidation tactic. But the point is, they have no legal authority. The federal statute that controls incitement to violence says that unless the violence would be a violation of federal law, there's no federal incitement charge. So even if this was a real concern, and it's obvious that, you know, under the heading of threats of violence, which are very rare, what they're trying to do is stop people from voicing their dissent in ways that they characterize as, intimidation and the like. Harassment, those things are not federal crimes. They may, most of the time they're not even state crimes if it's a matter of free speech and political dissent. But, you know, we can all agree that a lot of forms of dissent, a lot of forms of intimidation are repulsive, and they're the kind of things that people shouldn't engage in. But the law doesn't have anything to say about them because of the First Amendment. And I find it astonishing that Biden can say if radical leftists follow a sitting U.S. president, a sitting U.S. senator into the ladies' room to give her a hard time because she's perceived as blocking Biden's, you know, $3.5 trillion socialist spend-a-thon, that is fine. As Biden said yesterday, that it's, you know, just part of the process. But somehow, if parents express dissent about the things that are being taught in the schools, the FBI has to come in.
Wow. Explain something to me, though, in terms of how the law works. I mean, the letter that the National Association of School Board, they sent to the president, they cited the fact that some of the threats came through the mail, so then that's why this is supposedly requiring federal intervention. Is that really enough to get the feds involved, and what's the law behind that?
Well, if you use an instrumentality that is a federal instrumentality or one that is in interstate commerce, so if you communicate threats by mail or if you do it across state lines by the internet, say, there could be federal jurisdiction, but you don't get to the question of whether there's been a threat unless it's a threat of violence that the federal government is allowed to get involved in. So if I write an angry letter to my school board and I put it in the mail and I say, you know, this critical race theory has to stop, that can't continue to go on, but I haven't threatened anyone, it doesn't matter if I've sent that in the mail or across the internet or delivered it in person. If it's not a cognizable threat of imminent violence, then there's no federal, there's no even law enforcement interest in that, much less a federal law enforcement interest.
Right. You know, I also think about free speech here. I mean, you have a lot of very frustrated parents going to these school boards and saying, hey, you know, what are you teaching these kids? And then, of course, you had McAuliffe saying, hey, parents shouldn't have a say in what's being taught to the kids. How far does someone have to go before you can say that they violated the law when it comes to free speech? Can't parents sound off like this?
Yeah, of course they can. Again, there's no prosecution because of the First Amendment. You cannot criminalize speech unless it not only evinces a clear threat of the use of force, but you have to be able to show that the speaker intended that force be used. And even that's not enough. You also have to show that under the circumstances, the threat of force was foreseeable, likely, and imminent. So, you know, you're trying to distinguish with the First Amendment, you know, a real threat of violence as opposed to, say, you know, the guy who's sitting in the stands who yells, kill the umpire because he doesn't like the, you know, the guy getting thrown out at third base.
So it
has to be real. It has to be intentional. It has to be clear. There has to be an actual chance that violence is going to be carried out. And it has to be imminent. You know, it has to be a situation where you call for violence, violence is likely, and, you know, violence could very well happen.
Yeah. Outside of the law, Andy, I'm curious about your perspective just on what we're seeing in our educational institutions. You know, it used to be at the higher levels of education, you'd see some of this really liberal and wacky stuff being taught. Now it seems that our children are being targeted by it. And I don't understand the school administration. I have a family full of teachers, but I don't understand how they can blindly allow this stuff to be taught and what the bigger picture is. Do you see an agenda, some sort of ideological indoctrination taking place here? What do you see happening culturally?
Oh, yeah, I think there's no question about that, Drew. I mean, I think Terry McAuliffe, who's running for governor of Virginia again, let the cat out of the bag about a week ago when he basically said, we don't want parents involved in education. I mean, the leftist vision of education is that the schools are kind of indoctrination mills and the parents mind their own business while the left, you know, basically decides what you need to know to be a good contributing citizen in the America that they envision. And they don't want parents to be interfering in that. It's not too often, because it's such a radical idea, it's not too often that you get someone like McAuliffe, who's a very influential Democrat, to basically give voice to what, you know, what they otherwise don't say out loud, but try to do. But they don't want parents involved. Yeah. But feel that if parents raise their children in their religious and cultural tradition, with a love of America and an understanding of American history, warts and all, that is problematic, because those children are not likely to become citizens as the left envisions what citizenship should be, which is what it's trying to create. Again, it's not usual for them to say out loud what they're trying to do. What usually happens is they just quietly go about it, and every now and then we hear some horror story that happened in a school. But this is their vision of what education is.
Yeah, you got it. Well, look, I'm grateful for all that you do at National Review, and of course your contribution on other networks as well. I know people can follow you if they want to get on Twitter. It's at Andrew C. McCarthy. That's at Andrew C. McCarthy. You can follow him. You'll appreciate all of his posts there. Andrew, thank you for your time. It's always good to have you here.
Thanks, Drew. Have a good one.
Thank you. That's Andy McCarthy. He's also the author of that book, Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy the Presidency. You can check it out. But grateful for his insight and his time. Look, something I just want to keep my finger on the pulse of. I mean, we are seeing right now education madness. I mean, that's really what it is right now, education madness. And there's overreach with the Department of Education. We are seeing just unbelievable stuff that our kids are being exposed to, right? You know, there is paganism, believe it or not. I was driving in the car a little bit earlier today, and Patrick had actually touched on this, where, you know, Aztec deities were being prayed to. I mean, just bizarre stuff. How far do you go from this gender fluidity type of stuff that's being taught to critical race theory to just downright paganism? It's PC madness. It's political correctness. Yeah, it's gone too far. You as a parent are the primary educator of your child, and I want you to know that it's not the school board. It's not the teachers. It's you. You know, that's the role you have been given. Know what is going on, all right, in your school. Know what your kids are reading. Know what they're being exposed to, and make a difference. My heart goes out to you. I say this many times. My children are now out of college, so I am a happy man. But the thought of them going through grade school or high school right now, oh, my gosh, it is a different world for you, the parent. It's a great challenge, but I'll tell you what, you can plant those seeds of greatness in your child. You can plant those seeds of truth, and you can make a difference. There's something about truth that gets rooted. There's something about truth that resonates and that will blossom later in life. So don't let the school be the educator for your kids. Make sure you know what's being taught, and then you correct where they're wrong, and you call out these school boards and these teachers when they're doing things that you know are immoral and dangerous to your child's innocence. All right. I only have a moment or two left. We'll talk a little bit more about it coming up, and you're more than welcome to join me. My number here, 888-914-9149. Love to hear from you. 888-914-9149. Feel free to dial in. Before I take this break, I take a short pause, then we'll pick it back up. I want to give you something, okay? I want to put you in touch with something that a very generous donor has made available. And I was actually given one of these, I would probably say maybe 15, I don't know, years ago. Maybe it's that long. Maybe it could be longer, a little bit shorter. There is a donor who has this great passion, this incredible devotion to making sure that Christ is kept in Christmas. And when I first joined Relevant, she gave some of us that were working here these beautiful nativity sets. I'll keep her name anonymous. And Relevant, they would like to give it to you too. We actually have 200 of these, thanks to her generosity. And she's partnered with us because, look, we live in a culture. You just heard what's happening in our schools, right? God is taken out of them. Our kids are being indoctrinated. There's this radical ideology our children are being exposed to. And it all comes when we take God out of the culture, when we take God out of the family, when we take God out of our lives, there's a ripple effect for that. You know, there's a void, and that void will have to be filled with something. And you see what it's now being filled with. We need to keep Christ in the culture. One of the areas that has been targeted, and always surprised me because I thought, of all the places you're going to try to take Christ out of, is Christmas. That's what this day is about, right? Christmas is about the birth of Jesus Christ. It's about the incarnation. It's about God becoming man. It's about the yes of the Virgin Mary, her fiat. It's about the chastity and the noble nature of Saint Joseph. It's a time to celebrate. It's a time of mystery and wonder and miracles, right? It's a incredible moment in human history. And yet, what do we have? We have our culture saying, nah, we don't want Christ in there. Take him out, right? And we strip the one holiday that has Christ's name in it out, right? So I love what she's doing here. She's like, you know what? Let's keep Christ at Christmas. You don't have to go out and preach. You don't have to try to defend the position of why Christ should be in Christmas. You can do so much with so few words. And this nativity set, I think, is such a beautiful reminder of what the season is all about. You know, the one thing under attack today more than anything is the family. And this is a depiction of the perfect family, the holy family. There they are together in the stable where Christ was born. It's a celebration of the incarnation and the light and the hope that Jesus brings to the world. And you know what? We need it today. So I say to you, this is absolutely free. The nativity set, it's an outdoor hand-painted set. It's actually beautiful. My wife and I have it, and I put it right outside of where our home is. So as people walk up the walkway to come to the front door, there's a light on this thing, and you see this beautiful outdoor nativity set. It's a silent way to say, hey, this is really what Christmas is all about. And I want you to have it. We have 200 of them. So there's probably a great probability you might get it. All you have to do is go to relevantradio.com and sign up. You can sign up and win. Okay, sign up and win one of the 200 nativity sets. You can also go to our website. There's images there. You can check it out. But there's plenty of time for you to get it. Set it up before Advent begins. Can you believe Advent's going to be here November 28th? It's right around the corner. And on October 18th, you have got to get your entry in before the 18th. We're going to draw those 200 winners, and then those sets are going to be shipped directly to you. It'll come right to your door. So go today, okay? Oh, wait, no. Thank you, Maggie. Maggie's telling me it's not the 18th. 18th is the winner, but October 15th is the deadline, she's saying. October 15th. Is the deadline. You're right. We have to let them know when your last day to get in. I wouldn't wait. I'd get in right now. Get in now. All right. Don't wait. Don't wait to the last minute. October 15th, if you are a procrastinator, but you might miss your opportunity. October 18th, we'll draw 200 winners. But the clock is ticking. The sand is draining through the hourglass, as I like to say. And it's your opportunity to get one of these beautiful. They are really nice nativity sets. They're kind of big. All right. Well, look, just wanted to put it on your radar. There you have it. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, I'll take a few of your calls. We'll talk much more about what we're seeing unfold in our culture and our schools. And, of course, always love to have your perspective on it. Stay with me. The conversation will continue right after this.
Connecting you to the truths of your Catholic faith. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
The Relevant Radio Studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans available at relevantradio.com/forester.
Hey, thanks for your patience. If you're on hold, I'll get you on the air. Thank you for joining me, for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. Happy feast day to St. Faustina, the first saint of the third millennium, the new millennium here, and, of course, the great recipient of the Divine Mercy message. Let's talk. Let's talk about something that, you know, my heart goes out to you as parents. Let's talk about what's happening with these school boards across country. You might have kids in school. You might be an educator. You might have grandkids. You know, when the pandemic hit, schools all across the country, they closed down, right? And many of you had to learn to homeschool. Students of all ages were sent home. They had to deal with online learning. You know, my sister-in-law is a school teacher. She had to teach from home. For students in elementary and middle schools, that meant, you know, parents could actually see what was being taught. And this was an eye-opener, right? What a lot of parents heard, what they saw actually shocked them. It appalled them. And I feel bad for some of these teachers. It could be kind of intimidating. You don't just have your 32nd graders or your 35th graders or however many is in your class, but now you got their parents. But you know what the parents heard, and I think they were right. They heard critical race theory being taught. They heard gender theory being taught to kids. They heard explicit sex education being taught. And this was happening at all age levels. And I'm not just saying, hey, it's high school. No, it was from kindergarten up. So, you know, when school boards started meeting in person again, a lot of parents were saying, whoa, we never knew this was happening. We sent our kids to school. They got off the bus. We thought they were learning, right? We know they were exposed to this. Suddenly, parents started showing up, and they were not happy. And you heard about that mother in Virginia, right, who started reading to the school board. I shared that story a couple days ago. She grabbed one of the school library books that had graphic descriptions of pedophilia in it. And she began, she goes, I want to read to you, you know, what our kids are being taught or what they have access to. And she opened the book and began reading. They asked her to stop reading because there were children in the room. And I found out after that there weren't any children in the room. But the board member who said that used it as an excuse because of how embarrassed they were over what she was reading. I mean, really? You're going to read a book with descriptions of pedophilia? I mean, shame on that school. How does that stuff even get there? Yeah, another video that went viral was that of a mother. She was in New York City, or in New York, I should say. I'm not sure if she was in the city, but she was in New York. She told the school board that, you know, since she was, you know, paying for them with her taxes, she would wait until they could tell her why they were allowing critical race theory to be taught to her daughter. And that's happening all over the country. It's not just those two cases. It's happening in greater frequency with greater intensity. Something else that's happening is the number of parents pulling their kids from public schools. They're either homeschooling them or they're sending them now to private or parochial schools. And that could be an expense for some parents, but parents are realizing, look, I'm the primary educator. I need to make sure my kid is well-formed, and they're willing to make that sacrifice. But there are some school board members who are feeling besieged by this, and I could understand. I certainly want to sit in their chair. And again, not all school board members are like this. I was going to be charitable and give this to you in a proper perspective. But there are some, you have to admit, you hear these cases, you read about some of these situations, I'm like, how does that get into the school? Many of these school board members feel they're just doing their civic duty. You know, they're volunteering their time to help with local education. According to the National Association of School Boards, some of them actually quit because they felt intimidated. Others, and this is totally wrong, others have been threatened. They've been threatened with physical harm. And I wish parents wouldn't do that. I mean, you don't need to go there. I think calling out what's wrong, being vocal, just reading what it is, you know, for the rest of the world to see, that's enough. We've got to stop these threats of physical harm. Totally wrong. But for the most part, school boards are finally being held accountable for what is actually going on in schools, you know, and parents have had enough. And I'm delighted to see this. I thought, look, let's talk about it. Share your experience. Have you gone through it? If you're a teacher, love to hear from you as well. If you're a parent and you've been shocked, feel free to sound off. I've invited Mary Rice Hassan, who is a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, where she directs the Catholic Women's Forum. And she co-authored a book with another great guest that has been on this program, Dr. Farnan. Mary has co-authored the book called Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public School Before It's Too Late. Kind of a harsh title, but an honest one. Hey, Mary, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Thank you so much, Drew. Wonderful to be on.
It's a delight to be here. Well, you know, you and Dr. Farnan have been talking about this for a while. What's being taught to our kids, what they're being indoctrinated with. Mm-hmm. I guess this doesn't really shock you, does it? I mean, the pandemic, you know, God brings good out of every situation. I guess it has kind of pulled the curtain back, hasn't it? And showed parents, you know, really maybe what their kids are exposed to, and they may have never known. They might have gone blindly through the year, letting their kids go through that class into the next one. So what has the pandemic done? And is this an anomaly or is this a reality?
No. This is definitely a reality because it's been interesting. Our book came out in 2018, I think it was, and there is nothing that has come forward in the recent news through the pandemic and more recently with parent protests and stuff that we didn't document in our book. And we have only scratched the surface of it in terms of public awareness of what has been pushed through the public schools. And again, there are many good teachers, many good administrators, many good families who are part of those communities So I'm not demonizing them. But the truth is, just as we saw with the National School Boards Association letter to President Biden and the power of the unions during COVID, that much of this stuff comes from the top down, or it's driven by the threat of litigation. And that makes the average school board person who may not have an agenda really kind of caught. They're caught in the middle. So this is a good development. I think the parents have become aware of what their kids are being exposed to, and that many of them are banding together and are speaking out. I think it remains to be seen what the effect will be.
My guest today, Mary Rice Hassan, you can join us too if you want to. 888-914-9149. Mark's got a question for you or a comment. He's sure. Listening in Fishers, Indiana. Mark, thanks for joining the conversation. Hey, Mark, go right ahead.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say I think that school boards have been taken over by leftist activists, and these are down ballot, you know, positions, and consequently they don't get very much advertising. And I think a lot of leftists have run for school boards, and a lot of them are on school boards now. I know that I'm seeing it more and more, even here, and this is a conservative part of Indiana, but they're here. And I think if you want to take back education, number one, you have to emphasize that parents are the primary educators of their kids. Yeah. And number two, we have to encourage good people with good values to run for the school board.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And thank you for you know, just sharing your experience and your perspective, because I think you're spot on that certainly for the past decade and probably longer, we have had many of the school boards literally being taken over, certainly in the largest metropolitan kinds of areas, but even in smaller towns. And oftentimes it's just a function of time. The average family is, you know, they're working, they're trying to take care of their kids, and they're thinking, I don't have time to do something like this. But the reality is then we have people on the school boards who are not representative of the families in the community and the values that people hold, the shared values, not just Catholics and Christians, but people who are Orthodox Jews, people who are Muslim, people who are of other faiths, and just they don't want this stuff being shoveled towards their kids. So it's you're right. It's been taken over, but I'll give you a sense of the magnitude of the problem. There are over 90,000 school board members. And so when you talk about the number of elections, the number of people who need to step up and run, and the amount of money that can take, because unfortunately we've seen here in Northern Virginia that as soon as you start to mount a challenge, outside money comes in and starts buying ads and driving up the cost, really, of trying to run for school board. So it's a challenge.
That's amazing. Hey, Mark, thank you. I appreciate you calling and sharing with us. Let me move along. Go to Joyce in Pennsylvania. If you want to get in, I'd love to hear from you. 888-914-9149. Joyce, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I just wanted to tell you about, I think 6 years ago, my daughter was probably 15. She's probably 24 now, so it would have been 8 years ago. I was cleaning upstairs, and I noticed a book on her bed. It was a paperback book. Just something told me to go over and look at it. And it was it was about this girl who was dying, and she had her last wish was to have relations with a boy. And it was very descriptive.
Wow.
I mean, down to the dot. And I did take it in front of the school board. Actually, first I went to some of the parents, and I kind of talked to them, and none of them would stand behind me. So I went to the school board, and I was very quiet back then, but I did tell them about it. I started reading a bit of the description, then I stopped. I don't know if it was taken out of the thing, out of the library, but I did call the teacher who handled the library, managed the library, and she told me it was there because it won the Pulitzer Prize. She had not reviewed it at all, and that's what she said. But I think there are a lot of books in our libraries that we don't know about.
Yeah, I'll give you a little tidbit here, which is a little bit troubling, and that's that the American Library Association is dominated by the left, and so the books that get the American Library Association's awards, the books that are promoted to kids through like the top teachers' selections, their favorite library books, et cetera, they all have a leftist bent. And I'm not talking about political ideology. I'm talking about the view of the human person, of sexuality, of normal relationships,
right,
of dignity of everyone, and you know, without getting into the racial polarization and everything. So it's not what it was like 20 years ago when, you know, homeschoolers used to frequent the library, frankly, because you got books for free. It was a rich word environment. And these days it is dominated by people who are choosing books that you wouldn't want your kids to read. You wouldn't want to read. So there's a lot of work to be done, but I salute your courage and willingness to speak up like that.
Hey, Joyce, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, that's it. Just one quick thing. Our school board has Christian members and some Catholic members on it, but I don't think they're even aware. And I think the parents have to step up and start looking at what's in the library and different things.
And that's such a good
library
point. Joyce, I want to follow up on your point because I think it's an important one. I mean, is it possible, you know, that a lot of these board members aren't aware? I mean, they haven't read this. They might have an endorsement from some institution, maybe a winner of whatever prize, you know, this book may have been awarded, and they think it's good and it's quality, and they just green light it. So to Joyce's point, Mary, I should say, the bottom line is, parents have got to do their due diligence. They have to know what their kids are reading.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's problematic, bring it to the attention of those particular board members. Let me take a quick pause here and take a short break. When we come back, we'll grab a few more calls, and then you and I can talk much more.
Great.
Guest today, if you want to get in, it's 888-914-9149. I'm talking this afternoon with the author of the book, Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public Schools Before It's Too Late. She had her finger on the pulse of this stuff back in 2017 and 18 when they decided to write this book. And Mary Rice Hassan, of course, hails from the Ethics and Public Policy Center. And you can check her out there at the Catholic Women's Forum. We'll talk more right after this. Stay with me.
The Relevant Radio Studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans available at relevantradio.com/forester.
It's like a civics class on the radio. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, civics. We need some civics. It's good to be with you today. I'm Drew Mariani, and if you are just joining us, we're taking a look at a lot of different issues dealing with education in the country. The Biden Justice Department has made some threats against parents. The FBI may get involved. We see what's happening at these school boards all across the country, and as I was sharing a few moments ago, as a result of the pandemic, a lot of learning took place at home. A lot of parents got exposed to what their kids were now being exposed to. And when the school board meetings reconvened, they sounded off. And look, I don't want to ever condone some of the acts of violence that we see, the threats at some parents' level. That's wrong. But I do think parents have a right to articulate and express with passion their discontentment, their anger, their astonishment at what their kids are being taught. I mean, child's innocence should never be threatened in school. The parent is the primary educator of their child. I'm joined today by a person who, even before this has hit kind of its high point, and we're seeing more and more of this being reported, before the pandemic in 2018, she was well aware of what was unfolding. And she wrote a book with a colleague, and it's called Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public Schools Before It's Too Late. And it's good to have with me Mary Rice Hassan, the author of that book today. And Mary, I'm just curious. I mean, this came to the attention of a lot of people post-pandemic or during the pandemic. You were dealing with this pre-pandemic. How did you discover what was happening and what motivated you to write a book and put such a harsh title on it? I mean, it's a pretty bold title.
Yeah, it's not meant to be harsh. It's meant to urge people to realize, as we say, you know, you don't get a do-over on childhood. And each parent needs to understand very clearly what the situation is in their local school and make a decision. Is this going to help my child become closer to God, or is this going to pull my child away? And that's really the fundamental question, because everyone talks about cost, but I like to remind people that every education has a cost. You know, homeschooling, the cost is in time. Private school, parochial school, the cost tends to be in money. But in public school, what looks like is free can end up being the cost of your child's, you know, human formation or even their soul. And so I think those are important ways to reframe the decisions that we have to make about what's best for our kids.
Yeah, I agree. Let's take a few more calls. Go ahead, Doctor. I'll leave you thought.
Well, I was just going to say, I would encourage people, you know, you said earlier, just reminding people that parents are the primary educators, and that's true. But I think sometimes that sounds so daunting to parents, and they need to realize it doesn't have to be as hard as it sounds. I think one thing that people discovered during the pandemic was that you don't have to take the whole structure of the school day and bring it home. It's home is a different place to learn. So even if you're supplementing or you're trying to support your kids, and it doesn't have to and shouldn't look the same as the traditional classroom. It's much more doable. It's like an extension of being a parent.
It's a great point. Linda, thank you for waiting. I know you're listening in Wisconsin. You're on the air with Mary Rice Hazen, I should say.
Yes. I was calling in regards to the fact that you're having this CRT and the talk today. And I just wanted to make a statement. This is not just in public schools. My granddaughter does go to a Catholic school here in Wisconsin, and it is definitely in the kindergarten through eighth grade subjects. My daughter brought this up to the principal that, you know, she disagreed with this. It went nowhere. She had contacted the parish priest. It went nowhere. We got together a packet of information with actual copies out of the workbook that she was working with, or worksheets. Mm-hmm. We sent it out to our local diocese office, hoping that someone would step in. We heard nothing from anybody, which led my daughter pulling out my granddaughter out of that school in her last year of school there. What a shame. She had to start a brand new school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think you're right.
It's not just public schools. So people really need to be aware it's in our Catholic schools.
All right, Linda, thank you. Go ahead, Doctor. I'll let you respond.
Yeah. So one thing I would just remind people, because I talk to school administrators and people at the chancery level all the time, and one of the problems that they're finding is that as they hire new teachers, the younger ones have come up through teacher training schools, and even the experienced teachers are getting professional development education that is packed with all of this ideological stuff. So the challenge oftentimes for Catholic schools is to sort of deprogram or to reform, to re-educate on some of these crucial issues. So it sounds like, our listener here did everything right. You want to be respectful, but you want to bring the facts and you want to keep going up the ladder. And then if it's still not working, you remove your child. And I think my experience has been, by and large, most dioceses are doing a good job. It's a little bit iffier when you get to the order schools, just because they do things their own way. So parents have to be vigilant. But, you know, the church teaches, we've got the church behind us, that parents are the primary educators. This is a partnership between the church and the family. Right. So it should be a little harder for you to be shut down there.
Amen.
Hopefully
to that.
You'd be listened to.
Linda, thank you. Keep pursuing the truth. Keep being diligent. I think you'll prevail in the end. John in San Diego, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Great topic. My question revolves around something similar that occurred 6 or 7 years ago, if we all recall, the push for Common Core to be inserted into the educational curriculum. And, you know, back then, there was a vocal group that stood up against it. You know, we were made to look like fools in some instances, or, you know, violent in school forums, what have you, false fronts, whatever you want to call them. But needless to say, I'd like to get your perspective on how connected to that root of evil this is with CRT.
Well, CRT has its own terrible history that reaches down deep into academia at the university level, and it's just been imported out and popularized and yes, taught it at every level, in spite of, like, the National School Board Association in its letter to President Biden was saying, no, we don't teach CRT in our K-12 schools. It's just not true. It's just not labeled that way. And I think that's one of the things that the Common Core experience is a really important analogy, because parents were able to push back on that. But the moment they stopped being vigilant, a lot of the same content came in, just repackaged or not labeled Common Core. So it does require parents being educated and really continuing to make the point, to press the point.
Yes, vigilance is key. Thank you very much.
Hey, yeah. John, thank you.
Yeah.
Lisa in Madison, good afternoon. You're on the air with Mary Rice Hassan.
Hi, Drew and Mary. Thank you for taking my call. We have young children at home. We had them in a public school in the Madison area, and we're just fed up with the material we were seeing in the books coming home, even at this very young age. Mm-hmm. We opted to have them out of sex education courses. We as parents were one of the only parents who did that, and we were bullied by the staff to put them back into the classes. But the biggest thing was our kids came home from school. They were getting older, approaching like third grade. And they said, Mommy, we had this meeting again today as a school. And I said, okay, and what happened? And they said, well, they told us that there are two things we cannot talk about at the beginning of every school year. The first one is God, and the second one is love.
Ooh, wow.
And it broke my heart. And I thought, we have to do something as parents. So we made the sacrifice and put them into a Catholic school. Still in the Madison area, we moved to a different city. It has been the best decision we have ever made.
Well,
I'm very familiar with it. I applaud you. I'm very familiar, unfortunately, with the Madison public schools, because there's a lawsuit ongoing there regarding the gender ideology that's been promoted. And I can tell you, it's not just the content and the things that you try to opt out of, which you rightfully did. It's the culture. It's, you can't opt out of school culture. And if the whole culture is normalizing a false vision of the person or certain behaviors or attitudes or ways of speaking, that's like a flood coming down on your child. And how do we expect them to stand up against that? So, you know, education should be positive. There's so much good to be done. It shouldn't just be a defensive maneuver. So I hope you're finding that in the Catholic school.
Yeah. And Lisa, thank you for that call. And thank you for the sacrifice. I know it's expensive to send your kid to a Catholic school. You find a great one, they're going to get a great education and be well-formed. If parents can do that and make that sacrifice, praise God. If not, then, you know, wherever you are, make sure you are aware of what your child is learning. You are, as Mary has pointed out, the primary educator of your child. And it's not that you've got to teach them every lesson. You don't teach them physics, but you need to know what they are at least being taught. Right, Mary? Hey, before we go, I have less than a minute. Your book, Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child Out of Public Schools Before It's Too Late. How do people get that? If they want to read that, what's the best way to connect?
They can get on Amazon, and I really encourage people to read it because it's not outdated at all. You will see, all of a sudden, I think you will see and understand the culture around you. On a positive note, I will say there's a pastor in Virginia who does not have a parish school, but has decided they will give $1,000 or $2,000 to every family to try to make it possible for them to have a Catholic education.
Mary, thank you for being here. Always great to have you. I appreciate your time. I'm Drew Mariani, out of time for the day. Until tomorrow, remember, God loves you. Have a great day.
The relevant radio studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans available at relevantradio.com/forester.